The Tom Woods Show, episode 881.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
If your homeschool program is making you crazy and running you ragged, don't wait till next term to fix it. Check out the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum right now. Plus, get $160 worth of free bonuses when you join through my link, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. What a treat we have today. Ron Paul is with us, the former congressman and presidential candidate. You can see him daily on the Ron Paul Liberty Report at ronpaullibertyreport.com. And also joining us is Connor Boyack, who is the creator of the Tuttle Twins series of children's books that teach libertarian principles in a manner that is accessible to children. And there is a character based on Dr. Paul in the current book. We'll talk about that when we get started, which is, as a matter of fact, right now. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you today.
I'm excited.
All right. So as I said, the book is called The Tuttle Twins and the Golden Rule. And there is in this book a certain character named Chief Ron, who bears a striking resemblance to a certain former congressman we all know, who is sharing some wisdom with the children. So let's start off with the non-aggression principle, because Connor is kind of framing it as really just an expression of the golden rule, as an maybe an easier way to think about it that might be easier for people to latch onto, sounds less technical, sounds more universal and common. Let's start off with Dr. Paul. If you could say something about actually defending this principle in Congress for many years to people who were not very philosophical. How do you look back on that?
Well, with a lot of tolerance and talking to myself, be patient, time will help us all. But they don't think in moral terms. That was the biggest challenge, because I can remember saying, and I've said frequently, is that if you're on the House floor and you're debating on a bill, the two arguments that will be the weakest would be, one is a constitutional argument, and the other would be a moral argument. So they're not much interested in even paying much attention to that. But if you had, and this was done frequently, when we'd go down to vote, they would have on the desk there, they would say, well, this vote is on this, and this is important, and they would list all the special interests, the companies and special interest groups, lobbying groups, how they wanted you to vote. And I inferred, and I believe, that was probably much more important than arguing the case for non-aggression and the golden rule on a moral basis. Although I tried to do my best, and it came up, of course, more, in the presidential races, that there was a better opportunity to make that point. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of people that think in those terms. And the other obstacle I had was most people in Congress actually believe their distortions of what the Constitution is all about. Oh, yeah, we all take the same oath. They don't go home and say, I take that oath, but I know it's all wrong. They rationalize because they've been taught for so many years. They have not had any homeschooling or anything else. So they have been taught that the Constitution is a very flexible document. It has to be adapted to current times, and you have this liberal approach. So that's one obstacle you have. And then if you get too moralistic, of course, they condemn you for being moralistic. But nevertheless, there were still times when people would pay a little bit of attention about non-aggression, but they generally don't think in those terms. I think we have a long way to go to get people conditioned to think in the libertarian terms of non-aggression, and actually playing on this of the golden rule.
Well, Connor, I bet we would have much more success trying to teach this principle to children than we would teaching it to a lot of politicians.
Right.
So tell us about how you're doing that in this book, and introduce us to the character Chief Ron.
Yeah, well, riffing off the point you just said, Tom, there's a great quote. I wish it weren't, but it appears to be apocryphal. It's attributed to Frederick Douglass. And he says, it's easier to build, not he says, right, but it's supposed that he once said, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And I love this symbology. Like, certainly we want to educate everybody, but to a certain degree, when people are so steeped in their ways, their biases, the ideas that they've had for a long time, that's a tough nut to crack. As Dr. Paul just said, my own experience with Libertas Institute here at a state level, working in our capital at a state level, echoes or confirms what he said. It's very difficult when you make an argument that's a moral principled argument. They dismiss it as, oh, that's silly and Tea Party-ish and, you know, whatever, you're delusional. But when you approach them with data and evidence, somehow it's, you know, better and they receive it differently. So the idea here is, how can we teach children this basic idea? And Tom, as we've talked about on past episodes, so much of this stuff parents already teach their kids. Don't hurt other people. Don't steal their stuff. Be nice. And so we piggyback onto that, right? Every parent wants their child to understand the golden rule. And that's really, in my mind, it's the positive element to the non-aggression principle. The non-aggression principle, I see it as like a negative right. It's in a defensive posture. Don't aggress against others. It's okay to defend yourself, but you should never do X. X in this case being aggression. So that's the negative point of view. The positive is more, what should you do? And I think that's how we in the liberty movement need to do better. We often talk about freedom, but why aren't we talking about personal responsibility, which is the flip side? We're never going to have liberty unless we're all fulfilling personal responsibility. So we're trying to figure out, how do we communicate that to kids?
All right. So let's talk about a specific example. Ron, you had this very memorable, you had a lot of memorable moments in the presidential debates, but one of them was when you were in South Carolina and you came up with this radical idea that maybe the golden rule ought to have a little something to do with how we treat not just our neighbors, but people in other countries. And you were booed on stage for that. And I'm curious about your reaction to that at the time.
Well, you know, I didn't say, oh boy, this is so strange. It didn't totally shock me. It disappointed me. It was the biggest thing, because this was considered to be a conservative Christian audience. And this has happened, you know, a couple times during the campaign. And that to me was always a discouraging thing, because you would think that it shouldn't be evangelical Christians that are pushing, you know, preemptive war. So that is what bothered me. And then when I talked about the foreign policy, what I'm talking about is maybe we're contributing to this mess. Maybe there is such a thing as blowback. And maybe if we said that we shouldn't do anything that we don't want another country to do to us, that's when the boos and the hissings occurred. And this occurred another time in Iowa on a key time. They were having a major debate. They excluded me. We had our own, and it was probably a little bigger than theirs. But nevertheless, the group that was holding the debate was a tax group. And I don't know, I never thought I was weak on the tax issue. And the other was a Christian group. But they didn't want to have me there. And I thought, well, you know, there's something wrong here, because I've worked in the Christian community all my life. I was raised in a Christian church. And that is not exactly what I was that I was taught. So to me, it was so disappointing. Probably most disappointing because of not following the golden rule is what was leading to the killing and the wars. And I thought had already put us into the position of becoming the aggressor. And if you're not careful with that, even if you are careful, he comes back, oh, you're un-American, you know, you don't care about America, you don't care about the troops, you know, and then they accuse you of all sorts of things of being with the enemy. And it looks like that type of talk, you know, continues. But it was something that I was not totally shocked about, but very, very disappointed, and discovered that the condition of changing these views was a much more serious problem and a bigger problem than I had ever realized.
Now, let me jump in here. I remember that event vividly. In 2007, where you're right, it was Iowans for Tax Relief and some Christian group, and they were having a tax forum, and they were inviting all kinds of candidates there. They didn't invite you, and I actually, so then you had your own event that had more people than all their whole event combined, even though their event had like 10 candidates. Your one event had just as many. And I kind of date that along with the Giuliani confrontation as the beginning of the Ron Paul revolution, because people began to see, wait a minute, something's going on here. These people drove hours and hours to be on the weekend when most people are watching sports, they drove hours and hours to be at a tax forum so they could support Ron Paul, who was not invited to this other event. It made clear that if you are going to be disrespectful toward Ron Paul, you are going to feel pain from his supporters. And we did not realize the strength of those supporters until that event. Now, Connor, give me an explicit link between the Golden Rule and the non-aggression principle. The non-aggression principle sounds wonkish, philosophical, abstract.
Yeah.
But nobody would say that about the Golden Rule because they teach their kids that.
Well, that's exactly right, Tom. You may remember a few months ago when we were working on this book, I reached out to you and others trying to find what book talked about in compelling fashion the non-aggression principle, because each of our Tuttle Twins books is based on an original text. And I wasn't aware of any. And so I emailed several people, including you. You referred me on to some, you know, Mises Institute scholars, and no one really had a satisfactory answer. And what I found was that while many books refer, of course, to the non-aggression principle, one of Rothbard's books goes into it pretty well in one chapter of the book. There was no treatise that we could kind of point to. So I was in my office one day, I was looking at my books, and I saw Dr. Paul's book, A Foreign Policy of Freedom. And this book immediately clicked, because this book for me was transformational. I first came across Dr. Paul when I was watching a screening of a documentary called America, Freedom to Fascism by Aaron Rousseau. I just graduated college. This was 2006. I watched this and I'm like, who's that guy with white hair that made a ton of sense? here I am, a millennial, like, who is this guy? So I watched a bunch of YouTube videos. I got the book and I read through it like crazy. And for those who don't know, this book is a compilation of many of Dr. Paul's speeches on foreign policy over the years in Congress, curated, categorized. And I saw in this book basically advocacy all about the non-aggression principle. Yes, in a foreign policy context, but here was a book that was these bold declarations of actually putting into practice when it's at its most difficult, right? When you're talking about foreign policy and intervention, conflict and war, here was a book we could point to. And so that's what our book is, quote unquote, based on. But it's not enough to talk just about, I think, the non-aggression principle. Again, it's like talking about our rights. We have negative rights. You have the right to be left alone. You have the right to your life, liberty and property. Those are negative rights in the sense that no one has people's only obligation is to leave you alone, not actually to provide you with things or do things for you. So those are negative rights. I see the non-aggression principle in the same way. I see the Golden Rule then as kind of the cousin or the flip side to that, where it's the positive element. If we go around preaching, don't tase me, bro, which is basically how the libertarian movement has postured itself, that leaves a huge hole. And that's not very appealing to people, especially parents who aren't libertarian, who we could win over to our movement, bring into the fold and reach out to. But that's not a very appealing message. Is like, it's the quote we often hear, like, libertarians, we want to take over the world and leave you alone. Like, there's a great thing to that, but there are so many societal needs and issues where libertarians, especially, from a very social moral perspective, it's not just that we want to leave you alone. It's that, yes, we want people to be free to choose to help. And I think we need to talk more about that. That's where I see the Golden Rule connecting very well with the non-aggression principle, is to say no one has the right to force you to do X, but hey, that's a good thing. We should help people. Let's definitely do that. Tom, you've had on your podcast episodes talking about social entrepreneurs trying to, help the poor and educate and all these wonderful things that we can do, not through force, but through persuasion. So that's why we wanted to try and, in this book, fuse the two ideas together. But it's crazy because we're talking to like 5, 6, 7-year-olds about blowback. We introduce what blowback is in the book. We talk about revenge, collaboration between people, justice, certainly the non-aggression principle and the Golden Rule. And it's Chief Ron leading the way. We got our main character trying to resolve the conflict between the kids at this summer camp and helping them learn these principles and then put them into practice.
Ron, let me ask you something about one of the ways you used to explain your foreign policy. I think the idea of American exceptionalism, the way the neocons understand it, is very poisonous because it really is the no apologies, our government right or wrong, it's amoral and it's awful. And it gets in the way of reflection. People don't reflect on, I wonder if our government is behaving well or badly. They just think USA, USA. It's very unhelpful. But American exceptionalism is an okay idea if it's that we think we've got some great ideas and we'd like you to consider them. There's nothing wrong with that, and that's what you've promoted. But in particular, you used to give thought experiments that really were golden rule based. You'd say, well, how do you think we would feel if China was putting troops in Mexico? And if we would feel outraged by that, what makes us different from other people that we're allowed to be outraged by that, but other people aren't allowed to be outraged when U.S. troops are all around their countries? Did you ever get anybody who came up to you and said, I never thought of it that way, and that's causing me to look at things differently?
On occasion I would. The one person, and I know you, Tom, you've heard me say it, the one person that influenced me a whole lot was Leonard Reed. And I liked him because of the philosophy, but also his method of teaching and the tone that he used. And he always said that if you use the wrong tone, it's not going to work. So, yes, I think America is, in many ways, from my own interpretation, a very exceptional nation, especially, when we're talking about values of liberty and the success of it. But where I was turned off was, we are so exceptional that we can do this and we cancel it out. It's a Jacobinism, we will preach you democracy, we will do this, and then we will force it. So I like to use the word voluntarism, and set an example. I would talk a lot about set an example and let people want to emulate us. And this is what we do, rather than thinking that if you really want to change things. But the only answer that you can come up with is why don't they do that? Is not their ulterior motive of a lot of people. So, yes, they tell us that we're in the Middle East to remake the Middle East and make sure people can vote and have elections and all that. But they won't admit that maybe it does have something to do with oil and power and who knows what. So they will keep arguing that it's for humanitarian reasons, and it becomes a total fraud, and they have control of so much of the propaganda. That's the real problem. But they're running into some competition now, with the propaganda, that they can't just say that all these wars, are so noble. This whole idea of us going over there and saying that we're spreading democracy. Of course, we're not in the business of spreading democracy anyway. But they use this. So we go in, we invade a country, we throw them out, we have regime change, we demand they have an election. They have an election, and they elect somebody. Oh, he's not the guy that the CIA supported, so let's get rid of him. It just goes on and on, and this reveals where they are, where they're really coming from. But unfortunately, it's a constant battle, because we have the politicians talking from government. We have all the media experts and the TV. So Connor and others, we all have a challenge, and that, of course, is why Tom has worked so hard with us on our curriculum, and our homeschooling, because that is what I so strongly believe in, that you have to change people's minds, and that the answers are not political. You just can't say, well, when we get another 3 or 4 votes, then we're going to get rid of the Fed. It doesn't happen that way.
Let me take a quick stab at that, Tom, because I have something to say on that, too. I think Dr. Paul's reach is so broad, and rightly so, where you ask him, has anyone ever come up to you and said, hey, that influenced me? The answer is clearly yes, but maybe they're not able to relay that back to Ron. My influence is much smaller, and so I do hear a lot more directly from these people in these cases, where even parents that we're talking to, especially with the Tuttle Twins book, I think there's such great power in inviting them to consider how they would feel if it happened to them. And that's not something that our education system encourages. It's not something that the media facilitates. It's not something that they just naturally do. And so when you do, as you just noted, Dr. Paul has done, when you say, hey, how would you like it if this country did this to you? Or how would you like it if, you developed cancer and you were thrown in jail because you tried to use medical marijuana or whatever? when you use those thought experiments, I've seen it have great effect. I mean, directly in the people that I've used it with legislators, with other activists, with parents. Like, I've seen such great power when you invite them to consider, if it happened to you, how would you feel? And if they're a rational, honest, sincere person, they're going to try and work through that and say, oh man, if I experienced that, yeah, I'd be ticked off too. And that provides an open door to then continue educating them and persuading them, I think.
Right. And I think a lot of people, when they meet Ron Paul, they don't immediately say, here are the seven arguments you made that converted me. They say, oh my gosh, I'm meeting Ron Paul. You know, I think that's what happened. One last thing. I know Dr. Paul's time is limited, but before wrapping up, I do want to ask, given that we are talking about children, there's a natural curiosity about the Paul household with Dr. Paul's own children and grandchildren, and how you conveyed these ideas. Did you wait until they were curious and came and asked you things and then you answered them? Or did you sit them all down and say, this is the way it is? Or were there books that you recommended? How did you handle this?
You know, probably if you were viewing how we raise the kids, you'd probably think, well, they're not paying much attention. You know, they're not preaching. They're not doing anything. How did they impart these values? And I keep thinking about back when I was being raised, and maybe I got a little bit of that from my parents. My parents my mother got to high school. My dad didn't, no college and this sort of thing. But they were very, you know, successful in business and all. But they never said, you're going to college. I never remember that. But there were five boys, and it was almost osmosis. And, you know, and we never received a lecture on how you behave. When you go out, you know, you don't do this. You don't touch alcohol. Never heard that once. But for some reason, it was always there. We always knew what was right and what was wrong. In the same way, in our household, I don't remember ever, you know, questions were asking. We talked about things, but I think it was more, I don't know whether that's the right word or not, but it sort of was osmosis. It was sort of in the atmosphere, and they sensed it. So they all, eventually, learned the philosophy. Some read more, Rand read a lot. The other ones didn't read as much. And they just, got attached to it, but they would go out. They were really wanting to participate as a family event and go out and campaign, and that was exciting, and they would maybe hear a speech or two. But other than that, it was never, we didn't have, I mean, our kids all went to public school. There was not as great a need, and there weren't any real options, and we weren't cut out to be homeschool teachers, and there wasn't as much. We were, in the early 80s, we were still fighting for the right to have, homeschooling education. So I don't know whether that answers the questions, but we feel fortunate that they were able to absorb the values that we thought were important, but they were almost like never discussed. I mean, we attended church together, you know, we did the praying together, but it was never a lecturing type of thing, and very few serious discussions on, well, you know, this is right and this is wrong, don't do this, don't use drugs. It just never came up, and I feel like maybe we were lucky.
Well, it apparently worked out well for you, because you have a pretty good looking family in terms of everybody is successful, and it's the kind of family a lot of people would love to have. So somehow you did something right. That's really, really tremendous that you can look at your family and say, wow, amazing. They're children I'm proud of, not just for their careers, but because of who they are. And I mean, I've met a lot of your children.
And I want to add one more thing that's probably very, very important is having a wife that knows something about raising kids.
There now, you
she
go.
Was a kid. She always stayed at home, and I did travel. Medicine was very busy, and when I first went to Congress, I always figured I went too soon because the kids were still small, and one of the reasons why I went back home, and I didn't want to give up on medicine. But when I was going back and forth, even to this day, you know, she's usually was always there with the kids, and she knew where they were, and instead of just letting the kids go and go looking for trouble, the one thing is we had an open door policy. You know, bring them home, you know. So our house was the neighborhood meeting place. But she did a tremendous job in doing that. And, you know, being the main child raiser in many ways.
And it's interesting to be on her in her Facebook feed, because when Rand would be attacked during the campaign or whatever, even sometimes you, she would post a link to somebody defending him and she'd be ticked off. I mean, really like a mom, you know, just how you'd want your mom to be. Connor, as we wrap up, tell people how can they get the Tuttle Twins and the Golden Rule and indeed the whole Tuttle Twins series?
Yeah, I'd like to add a very brief note on that last point, and then I'll certainly do that. I think the osmosis thing that Dr. Paul mentioned is key. As I look at my own parenting style, if you give kids a textbook and say, here, you're going to learn about the non-aggression principle or the golden rule, like, they're not going to absorb that. But if they see you and mom living it, talking amongst yourselves about it, yeah, maybe. I mean, can you imagine having Ron Paul as your dad and going to a speech? You're going to pick these things up. I think we have so many parents out there who don't understand those ideas yet. They don't feel confident about them. They don't know how to have a discussion with their kid. I think, you know, those spontaneous, informal interactions with kids are key for them to really absorb and understand this stuff, rather than sitting down and drilling it into them and saying, hey, you're going to read this book. We want to make it very engaging. That's why with the Tuttle Twins, we opt for the storytelling format where they just see Ethan and Emily, the Tuttle Twins, experiencing this thing. In this book, they all go to summer camp and they see that the camp rivalry between teams deteriorates and they start fighting and cheating and pranking. And then Chief Ron steps in and helps them see a better path, and then they can unite to solve a common problem and become friends again. So I think the experience and the storytelling is where we got to go. The Tuttle Twins and the Golden Rule is brand new, just came out. All the books are at TuttleTwins.com. If many of your listeners have already got the whole set of books, they're just waiting for this one, you can just go to TuttleTwins.com/golden, and that's where you can get that book. But we're having a ton of fun. Super appreciative to Dr. Paul for consenting to be a part of this book. I think these ideas have such staying power. And being able to include him in this book and propagate those ideas for generations to come is super exciting to think about. So thanks to you, Dr. Paul, and to Tom for having us on today.
Well, certainly thanks to you both. I want to note that at tomwoods.com/881, I'll link to the books, and I will also link to the Ron Paul Liberty Report, which is the best source to keep up with what the Trump administration is up to by far. So ronpaullibertyreport.com is what you should check out. I'll link to all that at tomwoods.com/881. Thanks very much to both you gentlemen for your time today. We all appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Now, before I let you go, remember, because I'm about to give you a great example, remember all the great bonuses I give you? If you're planning on starting a website or a blog, you would be crazy not to use my link, because the bonuses I give you are gold. I publicize your brand new site right here on the show to a lot of people. I link to it on my site, which gets you some extra SEO juice. I give you 24 free video tutorials and membership in my private bloggers group, self-help, mutual help group. It's a tremendous series of bonuses. You'd be crazy to turn them down. You can find out about them at tomwoods.com/publicity. Well, today, I'm really happy to tell you about a brand new site created by a listener, and it's musicandguitarlessons.com. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm not a musician, hold on. I want you. There's education to be had here, because the creator of this site has done the sorts of things that I've been badgering people listening to this show to do. He's mastered affiliate marketing. He's mastered membership sites. He's mastered recurring income from the internet. He knows exactly what he's doing. He listened to a certain person behind a certain microphone over here. So over at musicandguitarlessons.com, what you will find is a bunch of brain training puzzles like Lumosity. But these puzzles are specifically for the guitar fretboard, and they're intended to help players of all levels understand and recognize the patterns on a guitar. Really helpful. This is a guy, by the way, he calls himself Ross, the music teacher. He says, I built a teaching studio while I was homeless and pulled myself into a comfortable life. Then I wrote a book, which you featured on your blog once, Music Theory in One Lesson. I spent just about all the money I earned with my music theory book on building this, the next step for me, which is musicandguitarlessons.com. Now, I'm going to link to this, because I just told you I linked to the sites that I mentioned on the show. I'm going to link to this at tomwoods.com/881, our show notes page for today, which It'll be listed as the listener website mentioned in case you forget it. But I urge you to check out musicandguitarlessons.com, created by a very loyal listener of the show, a member of my supporting listeners program, a great guy, a smart entrepreneur. Help him out. I want to give him a boost here and check him out. He's a listener of the show just like you, and he's got a lot to teach you. He's smart. He's a great teacher. So check it out, musicandguitarlessons.com. That will do it for this week. I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.